and welcome to the S Words Podcast, coming to you from the San Diego Comic Con floor. Today's guest is Dave Kellett of Sheldon Comics, which is today's S Word. Hello, Dave.
I'm so happy to be an S Word. Thank goodness. I was worried there for a while that I was going to call it Melvin, and I'm glad I went with Sheldon. This is good.
All right, so let's start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. You have had a pretty interesting career trajectory to this point. If I remember right, you started out at, what was it, Hasbro, was it?
As far as career, when I came back from grad school in England, I got a job at Mattel Toys and worked there for 8 years, originally as a writer and then as a toy designer.
Okay, and then from there you started making comics your living then, while you were at Hasbro?
Yeah, so during nights and weekends and vacations and holidays and sick days, I'd be working on my comic strip, which has always been my lifelong goal of a career. And about 3 years ago, my income level with Sheldon rose to about 70% of my Mattel income, and so I decided to take the leap, and then since it has surpassed it, so I'm happy with that.
So. All right, that sounds great. So also, you made it into the national syndication market for a little while, didn't you?
Well, in the same way that it's kind of like kissing your sister, I made it into United Media, which is the largest syndicate, but only to their comics.com, which at the time was they would try one or two web comics out at any given moment. And I was sort of in that, purgatory for a couple years. But at the same time, talking to people that were getting syndication, and 1 and 2 and 3 years in, they were still not making a living, still had a second job. And so around 2001, I realized that it was a path that was becoming increasingly impossible and decided to focus on the webcomics route, and haven't regretted it since. So.
All right, that sounds great. So also something that brings us to your comic strip a lot is that you really like dipping into the 80s pop culture. Can you describe how your audience reacts to that, like, and also just what draws you back to things like Tron or the A-Team or Superman, not just any Superman, but the Superman movies.
Yeah, and specifically the three terribly dressed disco lounge minions of Zod and Ursa and what's the other one, Non?
You know, that, I think
those,
so.
Those three, yeah. So, you know, like the 80s are, for me, my childhood, so I love to dip back into that when I can. And thankfully, a lot of my readerships are in their 20s and 30s and 40s and appreciate the dives back in pop culture as well. So, yeah, it's just a little bit of nerdery from many a time, you know.
So do you tend to get little internal conflicts with your fandom? I mean, you have the 80s pop culture, which you do pretty frequently. You also have a little bit of Calvin and Hobbes style humor. There's that really popular strip you have with just the curved tree and the crashed bicycle.
Right. Yeah, the strip sort of, in a way, it sort of is three different strips. There's sort of the meta strip where they're kind of aware of where they are, that they're in a strip, and they're interacting with pop culture figures. And then there's sort of the strip itself with the core, which is sort of this weird family, but has a sort of, you're right, it has sort of a Calvin and Hobbes sweetness to it. And then every once in a while, and it's rare, but I'll completely step away from it and do sort of a single panel. And you've probably seen those, that are just sort of straight commentary.
Right.
But it all sort of works within the world of Sheldon, because Sheldon's sort of a nerd himself, so you kind of imagine that these are things that he would be interested in.
Okay, and then so, you also have that miniature, like, fourth strip of just Pug fans, which seems to be a pretty strong part of your representation these days.
Yeah. So for people that don't know it, there's three animals in the strip. There's Arthur, who is a Sheldon's pet duck. And Arthur at one point sat on an egg that he found, attempting to do the right thing and hatch it, and it ended up being a lizard. So he's raising a lizard named Flacco as his son. And then Sheldon also got a pug named Oso. So yeah, so there's a pug, a lizard, a duck, and they all individually have their own little unique adventures that are almost separate from the human world. So So it sounds cliche, but there's weirdness abounding, and it's a fun strip to draw. I really enjoy it.
Okay, and also something I noticed when I was going through your book, Pugs, was that Flacco's design has changed drastically since he first appeared. So can you tell me how that started and how it sort of evolved into what it is now?
And that's actually both instructive for other cartoonists, but also fun probably to see for fans and readers, is that he was supposed to be an accidental character in the sense that Arthur was going to hatch this lizard and then he would be gone. So I didn't spend much time on the character design when I first created him. But people liked him so much that I kept him around. And once I realized that I would be keeping him around, I was like, well, wait a minute, I'm not happy with his character design. So I tweaked him at first slowly, and then now it's pretty settled, I think, into a very different, more wide-eyed Muppet type of look.
Yeah,
I think.
From what it looks like, he started out pretty much just as a standard iguana-looking character, and then he looks sort of like a naked turtle these days.
Yeah, probably. Probably not unlike a naked turtle. Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Yeah. And so another thing about your strip that sort of sets it apart is that you don't actually use your own font, do you? You actually personally letter all of your strips, right?
Yeah, and within my handwriting, and we're looking at a sample here, I have sort of four or five standard fonts that are either curved or, italicized, bolded with a crackle, almost a Kirby crackle. And over the years, I've gotten better and better at hand lettering. And my theory is that it adds, it's almost a fifth character in the strip is the hand lettering. It's a very personal feel. Mm-hmm. That a cartoonist can add to their strip. So yeah, so I've been very happy with hand lettering.
And you still hand draw all of your strips, right?
I'm sort of the rare outlier in that. I do it the old fashioned way.
Right.
And for me, part of it is the joy of, I love the idea that there is a finished thing, a concrete physical, given form thing that after a couple hours of work I have in front of me. And then also, I as a cartoonist love the idea that 100 years from now my strips will still be around somewhere,
Right.
And of course, as a business person, in the sense of an artist that supports himself, I sell my originals as well, which I'm not precious about them in the sense of I don't mind parting with them as long as they're going to a good home,
Right.
So for me, that brings me a lot of joy that they're out there hanging on someone's wall, which I think is a huge compliment, So.
Yeah, I actually own a few of those myself.
Ah, good man, that's right.
Anyway, so let's see here. Now, talking about the business half of things, how did you come to create and found and join HalfPixel.com, which is your collective with people such as Starslip Crisis.
Also an S, yes.
Yes. Evil Inc., unfortunately not an S, but Scott Kurtz is an S, so...
Oh, there we go, Scott. Yeah. You can talk to Scott. That's true. Scott of PvP, yeah. So over the years, like in the 90s and the early 2000s, you probably remember there was sort of a stumbling along of artists, not just cartoonists, but musicians and writers trying to figure out, well, how do I make the web work for me, A, and then how do I make a living from it? And so for me, that meant, honestly, networking, getting to knowing other artists, learning from one another. And so over time, I've been a member of Keenspot in like 98, 99, 2000, something like that.
Right.
United Media, which was a traditional company. I thought, well, what can I learn from them online? And tried that. And then joined Blank Label Comics, which is another co-op. And now I'm in HalfPixel, and HalfPixel is the most independent-minded. It's a very loose association of four independent businesses.
Right.
But we share ideas and thoughts and business practices and best practices and ISO 9000s of cartooning, all that sort of stuff. So
so I can see your white paper soon then?
Yeah, exactly. So so our accounting is very firm. But the idea is that there are things that you can share that don't impinge on one another. Mm-hmm. In the sense that unlike newspapers, it's not a closed system where for me to succeed you have to fail as an artist. It's not true that a rising tide lifts all boats on the internet, but when you find an association of like-minded cartoonists or artists, you can help one another out, that sort of thing. So that's what the basic idea behind HalfPixel. And then, of course, as we've found success in our careers, because we love comics and hate to see, a lot of artists feel like it's dead with the death of newspapers, we've been doing things like we wrote a book called How to Make Web Comics.
Yeah, you've taken to mentoring a lot of rising.
Yeah, and the idea is not that we have the final answers or anything like that, or that we can make a promise that you'll succeed, but just the idea of, here is our experience, and here's where we failed, and here's where we succeeded, and here's where we succeeded by accident. And so take what take our history and learn from whatever you can from it, take what nuggets you want to internalize and start your career on the web. And so we've tried to do that with How to Make Web Comics, and then Brad does a great job running a site called webcomics.com.
And you're also doing a seminar today, correct?
Yeah, it should be a big one, which will be fun.
I think, How to Make Web Comics, is it? Webcomics Bootcamp?
Webcomics Bootcamp.
Yes, Webcomics Bootcamp.
Yeah, 2 to 3 today. And then we also do a podcast called Webcomics Weekly, which is very popular. So
yeah, I've been starting to listen to that, actually.
Oh, yeah. So it's been fun. And it's also... it's even though the mentoring itself is valuable and nice, it's also just fun to talk comics, Mm-hmm. We're guys that live and breathe and hopefully die comics. and we want to see it survive and flourish. And it is, much of it having nothing to do with our efforts. There's so much talent out there. everyone from Kate Beaton to Ryan North to name a web cartoonist that's made it big, and we're all sort of mutually and sometimes quietly learning from each other, and it's sort of a great artist helping artist approach.
So I've been curious about this and I've been asking other webcomic artists about it, but what about your publishing process? How do you choose what goes into each of your books? Because unlike other webcomic artists, you don't just say, okay, this is a year of my comic and it's going in. You actually pick and choose and, you know, separate a lot of your strips. Like some of your material made it into the Pugs collection and not into, you know, the latest number 6 collection and things
sure,
like that.
Sure,
so
sure.
How do you go about that?
Well, broadly speaking, every strip that's ever... my goal is with every Sheldon is... I learned with the first book where I had left a few strips out, sort of in a moment of egotism of, oh, I don't like strip XYZ or I don't love strip ABC. And I've learned that most cartoon fans are completists. You know, they want everything. So from books 2 through book 6, every book now contains... every Sheldon strip that's online,
okay,
and some that aren't. And you mentioned the one thing that I made an exception to, which is a Pugs book that I did, which collected all the Pug and Dog strips into one, you know, Dog Lover's book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Pugs, God's Little Weirdos. And that has one story in the back that that's the only book that appears in. It's an expanded form of a story of a dog that gets lost. It's sort of a cute, wordless story.
Yeah.
And that only, you're right, that only appeared in that one book. So, but the idea is that they all make their way to print. But for me, that was an encouragement for readers to try out the Pug book as a gift or to somebody, you know, that sort of thing.
So, okay, that sounds great. Let's see here. So, and the publishing process itself, what businesses do you go through in order to get your books published? I believe a lot of artists these days are going to foreign presses, you know, either in Canada or Korea or places like that. What about you?
Right. Well, I own a California arts corporation called Small Fish Studios Incorporated, and it publishes all my books. And the printers vary from Canada to China. Like, for example, my last 3 books were done with Transcontinental in Canada. However, the quality on the last one was great, but I've recently come to really admire the quality from a Hong Kong firm called Oceanic, which does a lot of Marvel and DC and Image books.
Oh, does it?
And I'm thinking about doing a hardcover for the next December, so I'm thinking about going with Oceanic. So anyway, so Small Fish will contract out to these printers and then order them in bulk, and we'll warehouse them in L.A. and sell and ship them out from our store in L.A. So...
I see. All right. Well, we're heading toward the 15-minute mark here.
Oh,
so
you're good, man.
Do you have any final words for our listeners and for your readers who will be picking us up for the first time?
So it's at SheldonComics.com, or, you know, if you're having trouble, you can just search Sheldon. It's usually the first hit on Google. And there are 3,000 free strips to try on the old archive there, and it's up 7 days a week. There's a new one. And it's free RSS, free by email, free by the website, so any method you prefer to read it. We're working on Holo Projector, direct-to-beam Holo Projector. That's mm-hmm. That's the next one. So, anyway, but thanks for the chat. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Actually, one last thing is I feel like they should know that when you were working for United Media, I remember this story where they wanted you to color your Sunday strips, and this turned into a pretty interesting story, so maybe we can close on that.
You have to remind me. What was the...
I believe they said they wanted you to color your Sunday strips, and I believe you were colorblind in some ways.
Actually colorblind, and like a lot of guys, I'm colorblind red and green, which is the most common color blindness. And so I was setting up a Photoshop palette and started to color, and I think my wife was the one that walked in and looked over my shoulder at the monitor and was like, whoa, what's with the purple sky there, champ? And so she and I sat down and had to create a Photoshop palette that was literally labeled, you know, Sheldon Skin 1, Sheldon Skin Tonal 2, you know, Arthur's Beak, Arthur's Feathers, you know. And so it's literally labeled tree, grass, sky, all various tones of greens and browns and reds.
And do you still have that around for when you're coloring the books or making posters and things like that?
I do. So, and it gets use both in Photoshop and Illustrator now, yeah. So.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Dave.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. And remember, SheldonComics.com as well as Web Comics Weekly, the podcast. This has been the S Words Podcast live from the San Diego Comic-Con floor. And thanks a lot, Dave.
All right. Thanks for having me.